Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on fluoride fantasies when we come back. Hey, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. The government gets the other 60%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? And if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year, and you're going to net about 25%, and the government will get 75%, which means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more. That's about 8% more net take-home pay than you got this year. So you produce 100% more and you get 8% of that. Now, that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS, by the way. And that's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call me today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it'll answer a lot of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we're paying so much and receiving so little in return. If you'd like to order that free general law CD package, just call us direct and order yours today. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine when you get there and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Fluoride, it's everywhere. It's like chlorine in your water. They put fluoride in your water. They tell you that it's good for you because you've got a fluoride deficiency. I guess that's the rational basis for giving us fluoride in our drinking water. If you've got a deficiency, then you have to get it somewhere or another. So in milk, you know, they add a little vitamin D. Obviously, God didn't know what he was doing when he made milk. Thank God for modern science and mankind come along and fix God's mistake and put vitamin D in the milk and solve that problem. And then, of course, that milk wasn't safe for us, and so we had to pasteurize it and homogenize it because the cream came to the top. We made another mistake there, so we fixed that mistake with homogenization. And then the damn stuff was bad for our health and filled with all kinds of disease organisms in there, so we had to pasteurize it because he wasn't smart enough to figure that out. Well, now we got the same problem with our water supply that we had with our milk supply. God, evidently, for some reason, not knowing how to deal with water, water purification, and sanitation, failed to put fluoride into the water in sufficient quantities. So thank God for modern American technology. We came to the scene, came to the rescue, and now we have added fluoride to the water to protect our teeth because God obviously didn't know how to create teeth or some kind of a balance or some kind of a mechanism to prevent dental caries. That's what we've been told anyway. Well, surprisingly enough, there's been a lot of research done on fluoride and the dangers of fluoride. And when I saw this fluoride dangers over here, I thought, my God, what could be safer than fluoride in the water supply? I mean, it reminds me of how could you be any safer than in the hospital? Hospitals have to be the safest place that you can be because whenever you get hurt or you're sick, you want to go there, don't you? Now, under ordinary circumstances, people avoid the hospital like AIDS, herpes, and VD. But if you get sick, you know, you want to go right to the hospital where they have all these modern medical marvels or all these modern medical marvels to save your life. Well, that's what they're trying to do with your water supply, is to save your teeth and save your life. So they put fluoride in the water. Now, this fluoride is a deadly poison. It's a toxin on the order of arsenic and lead. Arsenic and lead. It's pretty heavy-duty stuff. But, of course, we don't put in a whole bunch. We just put in one part per million. So you have a million parts of water and one part of fluoride, a million parts of water. I don't know how they get that one part per million. I think that might be more like, you know, they're going to run a million gallons of water through this water treatment plant, and so what we're going to do is we're going to put in 1 gallon of fluoride. I don't know if they can get the concentration of that fluoride down to exactly one part per million, or if maybe it's one part per billion in some of the water and maybe 50 parts per million in other parts of the water. which means that some people might be getting a little bit more than their fair share of one part per million, and others might be deficient, might not be getting their fair share. They might only be getting one part per billion. I don't know exactly how that works, but I presume that if what they're telling us is true, we're all getting exactly the same amount, one part per million, and that's safe. That's safe. I don't know how safe poison can be. I noticed the other day I got a little package of Decon. That's called rat poison. And I put it out for the rats because I love them. And I don't want to feed them. I want to take good care of my rats. And so I feed them Decon. And I noticed that on the ingredients label, it's only got .0500000. I don't know why they had to put all those zeros on there, but they did. Parts of some kind of a poison. I can't pronounce the name and I couldn't spell it. Well, apart from reading it off the label, I couldn't spell it because I'm, you know, not that bright. But I did notice this, and that is that Decon, the amount of poison that's in it is only 0.5%. The other 99.5% are called inert ingredients. So it isn't that I'm really mad at the rat. I'm only 0.05000% mad at the rat because that's all the poison I put in there. The other 99.5% is all good stuff. I'm sure it's filled with vitamins and minerals and all kinds of good stuff for that rat. But they go over and they eat a little bit of that poison and kills them dead. And so the health professionals, they come to us and they say, well, you know, this stuff is perfectly safe. You know, it's a deadly poison on the order of lead and arsenic, but it's perfectly safe when we only take one part per million. I mean, this stuff is so damn deadly. It used to be used as rat poison until the big manufacturers that were producing all this fluoride figured they couldn't sell enough of it. They had more of it coming out of the pipeline over here than they could get rid of, and so they figured, well, it's good for rat poison, but we're not selling enough of it, and we got a big oversupply, so we need to find another place to sell this stuff. So how about a small amount of fluoride compound added to the water supply? That'd help get rid of this oversupply, wouldn't it? And that would bring the total fluoride content in the water supply in the United States to about one part per million in order to prevent tooth decay. I mean, you got to have a reason for putting this poison in the water. Let's try it this way. What if I came to you and said, look, we got a big oversupply of arsenic, and we need to have a place to get rid of it. And it costs a lot of money to dump this stuff in a toxic waste site. How about putting one part per million arsenic into the drinking water? You know, what if I came to you and I said, I've got some other kind of deadly toxic poison over here, and it's very expensive to get rid of. We'd like to turn that into a profit. So why don't we add that to your drinking water? Now, I know somebody's sitting out there right now, and they're saying, well, my God, Gordon, you got to put something in the drinking water in order to kill the bacteria in there, or we'd all be dying from cholera or typhus or some other infectious disease. Well, in Moscow, in Paris, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, they clean up the water supply, but they don't use poison. They use ozone. Ozone. So I'm not here trying to sell, you know, here's how we clean up the water supply. I'm just here to report on the fluoride. I wanted to tell you what was in your drinking water and maybe get you to think about that a little bit. I'm not here to tell you that you shouldn't have fluoride in your drinking water. If you've got a fluoride deficiency, I can't think of a better way to solve that fluoride deficiency than to put it in your drinking water. I mean, after all, you got to drink water, don't you? It's a cheap, efficient methodology for solving this fluoride deficiency problem in humans. But I want to ask the question, do we really have a fluoride deficiency problem? You know, maybe you've got a vitamin D deficiency, and we can put that in your milk. You know, maybe you got a B6 deficiency, maybe we can put that in your oatmeal, and you got some other deficiency, maybe we can stick that into the Infamil or Similac or something and feed that to your baby over here. But I mean, we're not talking about feeding something that you really need that's harmless, you know, like vitamin B6 or vitamin D. We're talking about a poison over here that's pretty heavy duty stuff. You don't take a whole bunch of this stuff to kill a rat. And they tell you they got to be so careful with it they don't get more than one part per million in here because they're liable to cause some kind of damage to you or kill you. Nobody wants to kill you. I mean, if you're dead, who's going to help us get rid of the fluoride? Now, we got to have a place to get rid of this deadly toxic poison that costs so much money to put in a toxic landfill. You know, a toxic waste dump costs money to dump that stuff there. If we could put it in your water supply, we could charge you, you know, $500 or $1,000 a barrel for this stuff, and we'd kill two birds with one stone. We could get rid of this deadly toxin that costs us money to dispose of, and we could get paid a handsome price for getting rid of it. I mean, that makes all the sense in the world. I'm a businessman. I can understand that, and I can understand the aluminum industry, and I understand and I sympathize with their problem. But I had to ask the question, do I really want to drink this stuff? And my conclusion was I didn't want to drink it, so I had to leave the big city. It's a big decision that you have to make, but, you know, that's the way life is. Now, I know you're sitting there in the big city, and you're saying, well, Gordon, you're not too bright. You know, you could drink bottled water here in the city. I tried that for a while, but I had to take a bath a couple of times a year because the stink got to be so bad in my underarms there that the wife threatened to divorce me. And so I had to take a bath a couple of times, and I discovered that the third biggest organ in my body, elimination organ, is my skin. So every time I got into the bathtub or the shower, my body was absorbing this one part per million through my skin. I don't know if very many people thought of that, but when you take a shower for 5 minutes, you absorb 10 times more fluoride than you do if you were to drink the water. In other words, let's suppose that you were drinking the water and then you didn't bathe, you'd only get 1/10 the amount of poison. So drinking the water isn't the biggest source of the contamination, it's bathing and stuff. So I figured that, well, I could get rid of 1/10 of my fluoride poisoning by drinking bottled water, but the other 9/10, you know, is going to come from taking a shower twice a year so that I could keep the marriage together. And so I thought, well, maybe I better leave the city. So that was my solution. So how about a small amount of fluoride compounds added to water supplies to bring the total fluoride content to about one part per million in order to prevent tooth decay? So we got to have a reason for putting this in there. So somebody back in 1943, I believe it was, came up with the idea, hey, let's come up with a health benefit for putting this poison in the water. Now, they did that with chlorine. They put chlorine in the water because it's cheap and it's effective. I don't deny its effectiveness. It kills the bacteria in the water. And after all, that's what we wanted to do, so we didn't get typhoid fever or typhus or hog collar or something like that. And it just works like a shot. But we've discovered, though, over the years that it causes hardening of the arteries. Arterial sclerosis, I think they call that, causes hardening of the arteries, which is just one of the contributing factors to heart disease, which is the most prevalent disease here in America. I forgot how many people we kill every year with heart disease, but it's a bunch. It's a bunch. It's 37%. Well, I can tell you about how many it is. About 2,500,000 people die in this country every year. And we'll just take times 0.37 on my famous Texas Instruments Sharp EL1197G, and that's 925,000 people that we kill with heart disease every year. And of course, we can't claim that we're killing all 925,000 of them with arterial sclerosis, or blame all of that arterial sclerosis on just chlorine all by itself. But there's a big bunch of it. I don't know what the big bunch is, but it's a big bunch of the 925,000. And I throw that number out there because, you know, you people went ballistic when 58,000 people got killed in Vietnam. Remember that? And you people just went ballistic, and there's only 3 or 4 Americans dying every day over in Iraq. And I would contend that probably in a population of 160 or 80,000 people, that if you had those same 160 or 80,000 people back here in the United States, I mean, if that same contingent of soldiers was just living here in the United States, I'll bet you that 3 a day would die from automobile accidents or from the chlorine or fluoride or something else in the water or something close to that. Now, of course, when they're getting shot over there, that just adds to the problem, and it makes people feel real bad, but I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Well, first of all, fluoride is one of the most toxic substances on Earth. It's on a par with arsenic and lead. It has no proven biological use inside the human body, and that's teeth included. Let me underline that. That was a pretty important statement there. It has no proven biological use inside the human body, and that includes your teeth. There. Now, of course, we're told that, you know, our teeth would all rot out of our head if we didn't have fluoride in the water. But I want to point out to you that I've got a whole herd of cows out here, and I've been watching these cows for some 50 years. I've never seen a cow with dental caries. Never seen one. And my cows don't drink any fluoridated water. None. Zero. Zilch. Of course, I never have given any Coca-Cola to any of my cows either. That's another plus, I guess, for the cows. I think what it is, we want to drink a lot of Coke, and then we want something that will prevent the tooth decay. I think that's what we really want, and you can't have both. You know, it's just not in the cards. You can be a whore, or you can be a virgin, but you can't be a virgin whore. And you can drink Coke, or you can have sound teeth, but you can't have both Coke and sound teeth. I think those two kind of go together. I'm not against Coke. If God made anything better than a Coke to drink, then he must have kept it for himself, because I don't know what that would be. But that certainly doesn't mean that Coke is good for you, or it's good for your teeth, or good to prevent diabetes either. Which, by the way, I should point out to you that the consumption of soda pop over the past 20 years has doubled, and it's just coincidental. It's not scientifically proven. It's just coincidental that the incidence of diabetes has also doubled over the last 20 years. And what do you think of that? Leads an old farm boy like me to conclude that if you were to cut the consumption of soda pop in half, you'd probably cut the incidence of diabetes in half, but we don't want to do that. No, I get that wrong. We don't want to do that refers to we don't want to stop drinking Coke. We'd like to double the consumption of Coke because it's good for the national economy, tastes real good, and makes us feel better. But we don't want the incidence of diabetes. And you know, it's the way life is, though. You got to make choices in life. And our choice is that we want to drink Coke, and we want to drink fluoridated and chlorinated water, but we don't want to have heart disease or diabetes. You know, it's like the girl working down at Flo's place. You know, you can be a virgin sweetheart or you can be a whore, but you can't be both. So you got to make a choice. Now, we Americans have made our choice, and I don't deny that. But as a reporter, I thought that I would do a little series of programs here on fluoride and at least let you know what the hell the problem is. Here's what's killing you, and here's why it's doing it. And then when we get to the end of it, we'll come up with a couple of ideas. Maybe we could solve that problem. I solved the problem, and I think you could too. Now, the other half collects in your teeth and bones, and it makes them dense and brittle. There's no minimum daily requirement for fluoride. And second, it's a cumulative poison, and only about half of what we consume is excreted. All right, so you're going to drink one part per million. So let's drink 1 million parts, shall we? 500,000 parts are going to be excreted in your urine and out of your bowels and probably in your sweat. Perspiration, I guess they call that. And the other half is going to be retained in your body. So it's a cumulative poison. And the more water you drink that contains this fluoride, the more fluoride is going to be retained inside of your body. And what that one part per million does, as it accumulates in your body, is the substance and the subject of our story this week. So here's what's going to happen to you if you continue to drink this fluoride. Now, of course, when you're thirsty, you go over to the faucet, you flip on the water, and even if you knew that this water contained fluoride and chlorine and it was poison, you knew from experience that the last time you did this, it didn't kill you. And probably it isn't going to kill you when you drink this glass of water. So you drink the glass of water, you pause for 5 seconds, you look around furtively, and you discover you didn't fall over dead. And you sigh a sigh of relief and say, ooh, I got away with it one more time. Boys and girls, if you were to ingest, a couple of 3 grams of arsenic, it'd probably kill you in about 30 minutes or less. Fluoride takes 30 years or more, but it's going to kill you nevertheless. But it isn't going to kill you with fluoride poisoning. To my knowledge, nobody has ever died from fluoride poisoning. That's because they've never lived long enough to die from the fluoride. They die from atherosclerosis or arterial sclerosis, or they die from some other degenerative disease like cancer, muscular dystrophy, or Lou Gehrig's disease, or something else. And on your death certificate, it says, well, you died from multiple sclerosis. I mean, after all, you had MS for many, many years, and finally you died. And so the conclusion is you died from multiple sclerosis, but nobody ever asks the question, well, what caused the multiple sclerosis? And the medical community says, we don't know what causes it, and we don't know how to cure it, but for $100,000, we certainly do have a treatment. So you get sick, you go to the doctor, he spends a lot of time, effort, and energy working with you for several years. He fails, as he always has in the past, he is now, and always will in the future. You die, he signs your death certificate and says, well, this poor guy died of Lou Gehrig's disease or multiple sclerosis or heart attack. And nobody has ever been able to connect the dots. Well, nobody's ever connected the dots at CBS or NBC or ABC or in Time or Newsweek or U.S. News and World Report or Reader's Digest. But that doesn't mean that some bright young fellow hasn't been researching this thing of fluoride over the years. There have been now more than 500 studies of fluoride, all of them bad. There have been 3 studies of fluoride, and those 3 were all good. And the government adopted the 3 good studies and rejected the 500 bad studies, or negative studies, and adopted fluoride because we need to have a place to dump this stuff. And what better place to dump it than in your water supply? And then, of course, they came to us and they said, well, this stuff prevents tooth decay. That's a lie. It doesn't prevent tooth decay. It has not been conclusively shown that fluoride causes tooth decay. But there are indications that fluoride does cause tooth decay, although we don't have definitive proof of that. But it doesn't prevent tooth decay. Now, we do have definitive proof of that. And that's because in those areas where we have fluoride in the drinking water, we take a look at the children, we take a look at the adults, we take a look at the general population and in certain segments of it, we divide that up into black, white, and oriental, and we take a look at how many dental caries these people have, and we find that there is no significant difference between the dental caries of people who have fluoride in their water and people who do not have fluoride in their water. How do you like that? So what's the purpose for putting fluoride in the water? Well, it's to prevent tooth decay. I mean, you got to have a reason. I mean, if I came to you and I said, look, I'm from the American Institute of Aluminum Manufacturers, and we have a toxic waste product that costs us multiple millions of dollars a year to dump in toxic waste dump sites, and we have to add that cost to the price of aluminum. Now, do you want us to charge you more money for this aluminum, or do you want us to solve that problem in a marketplace environment? Now, here's what we propose. We will put this toxic poison, fluoride, into your drinking water, but we won't put in very much. We'll only put in one part per million. And then we'll save us millions of dollars a year in disposing of this toxic waste product. We can turn it into a profit and lower the cost of aluminum cans so that when you buy a Coca-Cola, instead of spending 60 cents, it'll only cost you 59. You probably wouldn't buy into that. You probably couldn't get excited enough about that kind of a proposal to want to drink this deadly toxic poison. But if I come to you and I say, now listen, this stuff is better than Viagra. I mean, think of the money you're going to save on Viagra if you just drink water with our magic chemical fluoride in it. It'll improve your sex life by at least 100%, maybe two, depending on how impotent you are. Why, you people would just love that. See, you'd say, well, we got to have more fluoride in our drinking water because it improves our sex life, you know, or it prevents dental cavity caries or whatever it's going to do. So we come to you and we tell you these great benefits that you're going to get from it. Now, after you have done this for a while, and it doesn't give you these benefits, after a while it becomes so second nature, so common. You know, fluoride in your drinking water has been here for 50 years, been here all my life, or nearly so. And it is so common, that, and it doesn't kill us every time we drink a drink of water. And when was the last time you had a heart attack, or when was the last time you died from atherosclerosis or heart attack or something, or Lou Gehrig's disease or MS? So you can't remember the last time you died. And so as a result of that, you don't have any experience by which you can measure fluoride toxicity personally. And so you accept it because everybody else accepts it. And besides that, if I were to raise the subject in polite company, I mean, we go to a party and we're sitting here sipping martinis, and I bring up the subject of fluoride, and I say fluoride is bad for your health, and we ought to march on City Hall and get this fluoride taken out of our water supply, you know, you'd look at me like I was Mork from Mork, you know, some kind of a dingleberry over here that needs to be eradicated. The other half collects in your teeth. Remember, only about half of what we consume is excreted. So what happens to the other half that isn't excreted? Well, that other half that doesn't leave your body is collected in your teeth and bones, and it makes your bones and your teeth more brittle. And those little white spots that are visible on the teeth of many children are called dental fluorosis. You ever seen a little kid, you know, and he smiles and he's got white teeth, all right, but he's got white spots on those white teeth. How's that? Okay, well, those white spots are called dental fluorosis. It's a condition which not only predisposes them to decay, but also provides a sign that systemic fluoride poisoning is taking place. Okay, so this kid is being systemically poisoned. It's going to kill him. But to my knowledge, nobody's ever died from fluoride poisoning because nobody's ever lived long enough to die from the fluoride because we only put it in such minute amounts. But half of it collects in your body. It's the half-life of fluoride. It's kind of like radioactivity. You know, they talk about the half-life of radioactive material. Fluoride has a half-life. Half of the stuff that you consume stays right there with you until the day you die. So all that fluoride that you've been accumulating in your body over the last 10, 20, 30, 40, or 50 years, you know, it's there. And what do you want to do about that? Well, most people aren't going to do anything about it. They'll say, well, I've been drinking this water for 40 years, and I guess if it's going to kill me, it's going to kill me. Well, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, partner. I didn't come here to spoil your day. I just came here to give you information. And what you do with it, your business in life. And I'm not on any crusade. I'm not going to write any letters to Congress. I'm not going to write a letter to my city council and tell them to take fluoride out of the drinking water. I'm going to remove myself from the drinking water, and then I'm not going to bathe in it either. That was my solution. I'm not opposed to people killing themselves with fluoride. Hell, I'm not opposed to suicide. If somebody wants to blow his brains out, here, then use my gun. Let me help you. But I don't recommend it, and then I'm not going to help you. You can use my gun, but I'm not going to pull the trigger or hold it for you. So it's all right with me if they put fluoride in the drinking water of everybody, as long as they're not putting it in my drinking water. That's the only thing I'm really concerned about is my drinking water. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is sponsored, or it's heard rather, 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective, 8 schools and all. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by pre-arrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through our website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Keep in mind that these endorsements or recommendations that we give out do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate by endorsing or recommending the Law Hour in editorial review. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, whether sectarian or racial or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour in editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or the management or staff of this network or local radio station, but they should. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and editorial review. Tonight we are reviewing fluoride. Fluoride, that ubiquitous stuff that's in the drinking water of most Americans. Heck, for that matter, it's in the drinking water of most people probably around the world, although I've got an article here that tells me that the Europeans have gotten rid of it. I don't know why in the hell those Europeans seem to be a mile ahead of us over here in the United States, but they haven't adopted or embraced GMOs, genetically modified organisms, in their food. They rejected that, and they have now rejected fluoride. 98% of Europe is fluoride-free. 98% fluoride-free. I don't know what the other 2% are thinking about over there, but for some reason, I guess they believe that fluoride is good or we don't care about it. Here in America, if you were to suggest that we take fluoride out of the water, I think you'd have petition drives to save our fluoride, save our fluoride. But in Europe, in any event, they have figured out that maybe it's not as good as we once thought it was. Now, along the same vein, since fluoride is a poisonous byproduct of aluminum, it's important to know the dangers of aluminum also. Aluminum is what old Larry Sykes used to call it. He said, I don't know, I'm collecting aluminum cans. But this aluminum over here, most every underarm deodorant contains aluminum. Rubbing or spraying on this very thin and soft underarm skin allows that aluminum to be easily absorbed into your body. Now, autopsies on Alzheimer's patients. Alzheimer's. You ever heard that word? Autopsies on these Alzheimer's victims have repeatedly shown high concentrations of aluminum in brain tissue. Let me underline that. Did you know that when you do an autopsy on somebody that has Alzheimer's disease, they find that it has a higher than usual concentration of aluminum in the brain tissue? It's probably just anecdotal evidence. You can find deodorants at your local health food store that do not contain aluminum. Now, boys and girls, I'm an old man, and I used deodorant once or twice in my life. The rest of the time, I just stink real bad. But then, you know, you can stink real bad or you can die from aluminum poisoning in the brain called Alzheimer's disease. It's a choice that you have to make in life. And so you got people running around over here. Now, here again, it's really God's fault, because if God had his head screwed on straight when he started this process over here back in the Garden of Eden, instead of making us perspire, he would have made us pant like a dog so that we could get rid of that perspiration through our tongue and our drool, and we could sit here and pant and drool and get rid of all of that toxic perspiration out of our tongues and out of our mouths instead of out of our underarms, and then we would have bad breath, but we wouldn't be stinking under our arms or in our crotches or wherever you put this stuff. So I've gone all of my life stinking real bad, and that's why people avoid me. They stand on the other side of the room because I stink so bad, but then I'm not suffering from aluminum poisoning from my deodorant either. So I just thought I'd tell you how I solved that problem. Now, cooking with aluminum is dangerous because the aluminum sloughs off into your food, and again, it's absorbed into your system through your digestive tract, and it's said that aluminum leaching into the food changes the molecular structure of the food, like microwave ovens do. So let's hear it from microwave ovens and all of those aluminum containers that have your TV dinners in them, so that when you heat your TV dinner in your aluminum container in your microwave, you can get your daily dose of aluminum, which will then collect in your brain tissue, so that when we do an autopsy on you, we can have some more anecdotal evidence of aluminum poisoning in your brain causing Alzheimer's disease. But we certainly don't want to say that aluminum causes Alzheimer's, no, do we? Drinking or eating from food or soda cans canned in aluminum should also be avoided. Glass bottles are best. It appears that the aluminum we ingest or absorb by way of our skin is retained just as the fluoride is retained. Uh-huh. So you got aluminum poisoning, and then you've got fluoride, which comes from aluminum, which is a poison. And so did you notice here in America that nearly everything that we buy today comes in an aluminum can? I just thought I'd point that out there. So when I'm going up and down the aisles and I'm looking at all this aluminum foil and aluminum cans and all this aluminum around, I avoid it like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD and Flo's girls. Now, I used to think Flo's girls were pretty good, but then I learned about VD and AIDS. Well, now I'm learning about Alzheimer's disease and aluminum and fluoride. Oh my God, I'm gonna have to make some more adjustments here in my lifestyle. So you might want to consider that the next time you go to buy Coca-Cola. Why don't you buy in a plastic or a glass bottle? I mean, we don't want to deter you from getting diabetes, but maybe we could deter you from getting Alzheimer's disease. So consider that. And then the next time you're thinking about TV dinners and so on for your microwave oven, before you nuke it, you might want to consider buying something that's in some other kind of a container other than aluminum. Not that I'm opposed to aluminum or aluminum poisoning now. If that's what you want, well, get after it. Now remember that dental fluorosis appears to serve as a red flag for future bone fractures. Bone fractures. Now you know you ladies are real concerned about osteoporosis. Has it ever occurred to you that your brittle bones and your loss of bone mass over here could have a little something to do with the drinking water? Just a thought. Just thought I'd throw that out there and spoil your day. Rain on your parade a little bit. The neurotoxic nature of fluoride is also linked to major motor dysfunction, IQ deficits, and learning disabilities. In the year 2000, a group of Boston physicians, these are medical doctors again, a group of Boston medical doctors concluded, quote, studies in animals and human populations suggest that fluoride exposure at levels that are experienced by a significant proportion of the American population whose drinking water is fluoridated may have adverse impacts on the developing brain. So if you want to have a dumb kid, feed him a lot of fluoride. Or, shucks, you don't even have to feed it to him. It's already done. Just encourage him to drink more tap water. Encourage him to stay in the bathtub longer. Take longer showers. That way he'll be cleaner as well as being dumber. An interesting question is, well, how did we get tricked into poisoning ourselves in the first place? Well, the answer is fluoride was critical to the hydrogen bomb makers, and it was needed to keep or to help process uranium, and tons of it are needed to process uranium. And during the mid-1940s, the DuPont Corporation supplied the U.S. military's Manhattan Project with the fluoride that it required. And there was a big problem. The area in New Jersey surrounding the DuPont plant was being contaminated by toxic fluoride emissions. And people were made sick. And cattle and horses were crippled. And crops either contaminated or completely wiped out and destroyed. So in preparation for the impending court battle, and to head off any negative publicity which might negatively impact the fluoride hydrogen bomb production schedule of the Manhattan Project, which was authorized by the military, by the way, to conduct its own fluoride studies. So the United States military conducted fluoride studies, and not only did they want information which would help diffuse the farmers' anger, but they also needed to know to what extent the fluoride workers were being damaged from their exposure to this fluoride. So some of the laboratory studies were performed at the Strong Memorial Hospital, which was the same facility, by the way, which injected toxic radioactive plutonium into unsuspecting human beings and used them as guinea pigs. Research from that time showed that fluoride had a negative impact on the central nervous system. And this research corroborates recent research showing the same thing, to the extent that the IQs of children in fluoridated areas are lower than normal. Other information and studies from the 1940s are apparently still classified, or they have just plain disappeared. Now, enter the aluminum industry. The aluminum industry was also eager to get the fluoride bandwagon rolling because they had been marketing their fluoride waste as rat poison and insecticide, and they were looking for a larger market, primarily to dispose of this toxic waste. So, over a 10-year test period, the test plan proved to the public that fluoride in water would reduce the incidence of cavities, dental caries. Now, before the test was completed as planned, and despite the fact that there was never any clear evidence that fluoride was either safe or effective, water fluoridation was declared a triumph for public health. Today, when fluoride safety is questioned, people with legitimate concerns are often treated with disdain, and they're told that fluoride is optimal, and in optimal amounts is safe, and the studies say so. However, the promoters and defenders of this toxin need to be asked, well, what studies are you referring to? When old and or faulty research, at least faulty research by today's standards, is thrown out, including that research from other countries like England's York Review of Fluoridation, in which important data was omitted or misinterpreted, there still remains no reliable studies confirming the safety of water fluoridation. None. Zero. Nada. There aren't any. These two are it. Not even are there any double-blind studies showing fluoride's effectiveness. There are, however, more than 500 peer-reviewed studies showing the adverse effects from fluoride that have now been collected over the past 50 years. Now, Hardy Limebeck, he's the head of the Department of Preventive Dentistry for the University of Toronto. I'm going to underline that name, Hardy Limebeck. He'd have to be a Canadian with a name like that. Hardy Limebeck, you know, he's the head of the Department of Preventive Dentistry. And these are the people that want to protect your children's teeth. And he has a job, and he works at the University of Toronto. He once belonged to a group of dental professionals giving talks to promote the benefits of water fluoridation. He was one of Canada's primary promoters of public fluoridation until he began to take a closer look at the research. So now he's changed his tune. And now Hardy Limebeck says, quote, "For the past 15 years, I had refused to study the toxicology information that is readily available to anyone. Poisoning our children was the furthest thing from my mind." And he added, "Your well-intentioned dentist is simply following 50 years of misinformation from public health and dental associations." Me too. Unfortunately, we were all wrong. Now, the author of this article here is Michael Barbie, excerpted from Politically Incorrect Nutritional, or Nutrition rather, Politically Incorrect Nutrition by Michael Barbie. And let's see, you can get this article from www.sweetliberty.org. How's that? www.sweetliberty.org. Issues, health, fluoride dangers, 3-page. That's the opener. Oh, I've got a bunch more here, kids. Don't go away. There's more to come. Now, the guy by the name of Dr. Hayroth, I want to underline Dr. Hayroth because, you know, if George Gordon came in here and said, you know, this fluoride strikes me as being bad for you, you'd say, well, who in the hell are you? And I'd say, well, I'm George Gordon, the plumber. And then you'd say, well, what in the hell do you know about fluoride, dummy? You're just a crummy plumber. And you'd probably be right. I don't know anything about fluoride. Don't claim to. I don't know any more about fluoride than Katie Couric does. But, you know, there's two sides to every story. Now, you've heard the fluoride story. You've heard, you know, about how good this stuff is for you for the last 50 years. I've heard nothing but glowing reports about how great this fluoride is and how fluoride keeps your teeth from rotting out. Well, listen, I lived in the city and I drank fluoridated water and my teeth rotted out of my head at the same rate they did when I lived on the farm before I had fluoride. I never noticed any difference. Tooth rot's tooth rot, fluoride or no fluoride. So I can testify that I didn't notice that it saved my teeth. I still have 3 or 4 left, but I'm just pointing out it didn't save the rest of them. Now, the moral to the story over here is that we were sold on the prospects of if we drank this fluoridated water, our teeth wouldn't rot out, which is okay. If we drank the fluoridated water and our teeth rotted out anyway, it wouldn't be the end of the world, except that the fluoride over here causes some side effects that they didn't tell us about. It's a deadly poison, causes brittle bones and brittle teeth. I did notice that my teeth were very brittle and they would just break in half and break off. So I can testify that the fluoride didn't help me any, made my teeth brittle. I don't know about my bones, though. I haven't fallen down, broken my hip yet, and died, so when it happens, I'll give you a full report on my broken hip. It hadn't happened yet. But I can give you a report on my teeth, see? And I can testify that the fluoride didn't do anything for my teeth. In fact, they haven't done anything for anybody else's teeth either, because fluoride doesn't do anything for your teeth. It does something to your teeth, but nothing for it. And 500 studies have come to the same conclusion. Now, there's 3 studies that are being relied upon by the pro-fluoride people, 3 flawed, old-timey studies, and nothing has ever been done to prove the safety or effectiveness of fluoride. Not one, none, zero, nada. 3 studies have been relied upon to show that fluoride doesn't have any ill effects. Those 3 studies are flawed, and 50 years of observation prove that they're wrong, and they were put out by the U.S. Army to start with for the express purpose of selling the program so that you wouldn't sue them for the adverse effects of making hydrogen bombs. And the aluminum industry jumped into it because they got a big problem with fluoride also, because it's a toxic byproduct that comes from the aluminum manufacturing process. And both of these groups have a monetary interest in getting rid of fluoride. 1, the hydrogen bomb people don't want to get sued for the damages they caused. 2, the aluminum people need to get rid of this toxic waste, and they couldn't figure out a better way to do it than to say it prevents tooth decay and put it in your drinking water and sell it and make a profit on it. Well, hell, for that matter, if we need to solve the problems of the aluminum industry, why don't we do the same thing for the lead battery makers? You know, I'm sure that they've got extra lead that they need to get rid of. Let's put 1 part per million lead in our drinking water, and let's say that it prevents your hair from falling out. And then I'm sure that the gold miners have a problem with the surplus mercury, so let's put 1 part per million mercury in the drinking water, and let's claim that that prevents psoriasis. You know, we don't want people to live with the heartbreak of psoriasis, so let's put in a little mercury. And then maybe the arsenic manufacturers have a toxic waste problem, so let's put in 1 part per million of arsenic, and let's say that that prevents your toenails from turning yellow and getting a virus under them here, you know, from these methophytes or whatever the hell they are. And then let's put a little arsenic in there. Now, let's see, we could have arsenic, mercury, maybe a little strychnine, fluorine, fluoride, and we've already got chlorine in there. I don't know what that chlorine, you know, that keeps you from getting diseases, you know, like cholera and typhoid and things like that. Why don't we do that? You know, it would stimulate our economy. I don't know what it would do to your health, but it would certainly stimulate the economy. And after all, if we can do it for the people with fluoride and chlorine, why can't we do it for the same people that produce a strychnine, arsenic, and mercury? Now, right away, some of you are saying, you know, that guy Gordon's just flipped out. You know, the guy's absolutely a lunatic. Well, my God, my kids, if a little bit of poison's good for you, wouldn't a whole lot of poison be even better? Or if you said, well, a whole lot of poison isn't very good for you, what in the hell makes you think a little bit's good for you? Rat poison has only got 0.5% poison. The other 99.5% is all good stuff. It's just grain put together with a little molasses, colored green so that it looks real good, smells good, tastes good. Rats love it. They eat it and die. It's only got 0.5%. Only a very small percentage of it is poison. Remember, Dr. Hayroth here is a prominent proponent for fluoride, and yet when he was testifying under oath at a congressional hearing to this question, listen to the question, he said, the congressman asked him, would you give fluoridated water to a person with kidney trouble? And the doctor said, no. The advice that we would give is drink fluoride-free spring water. Now, that was Dr. Francis Hayroth of the Kettering Institute of Cincinnati, Ohio, testifying before Congress. That reminds me of the medical doctors. When you come into the hospital and you've had a heart attack, the first thing they do is take you off pork. Did you know that? First thing they do, take you off pig because you had a heart attack. These doctors never suggest to you that you don't eat pig prior to having a heart attack. But as soon as you have a heart attack, they take you off pig. Why is that? Now, your creator told you not to eat pig at all. He said that pig's bad for you. I know it's full of riboflavin and vitamins and minerals. And I imagine baked wharf rats probably full of riboflavin and vitamins and minerals, but that doesn't make eating baked wharf rat good for you, does it? Okay, so the conclusion is heart patients off pork after your first heart attack, and this Dr. Hayroth says, well, my God, if you're suffering from kidney failure or kidney problems, we'd take you off fluoride. We'd put you on pure water. Has it ever occurred to us that maybe pure water might prevent kidney failure? I know it's a wild new idea, but tuck it away in your heart and see what we come up with between now and next time when we bring you the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you want more information about the Law School or the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.